Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinking Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinking Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, it's the winter meetings. I think he's looking at all kinds of options for building out his roster. So he asked if we would be flexible in the event that he had to move Saya and another player that you've read about. And we said that we would. So he's come and talked to us about a few different options. And we've listened. And I've talked to Saya about it. And he's willing to be flexible in certain situations.
Molly Ann Haw, Ruthie Polinsky sitting in for David this morning, and we are delighted to welcome in our guy, Bruce Levine, and that is the voice of Joel Wolf, the agent for Seiya Suzuki, talking to Bruce, and he joins us now on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Bruce.
Good morning, lady and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm hoping that there's some activity for the Chicago Cubs and White Sox before we leave here sometime in the late afternoon after the Rule 5 draft.
Very interesting to hear what Joe Wolf had to say, because I think one of the reasons we kind of settled on this idea that Cody Bellinger was going to be traded was because they couldn't move the corner outfielders, because the no-trade clauses would prevent them from maybe moving someone they might prefer to move. And then you got Joe Wolf there saying that maybe, say, a Suzuki would cooperate if they wanted to move him.
Yeah, he also ended that by saying it's a very small universe that would be acceptable to Suzuki if he allows the Cubs to trade him. I mean, what is in it for Suzuki other than maybe more flexibility, hearing that he's not going to have to be a DH in 2025? He's 30 years old. He had a reputation as a very good outfielder. He was a good outfielder for the Cubs initially when coming over, but deteriorated last year to the point where Craig Counsell felt that putting him in the DH role was more beneficial to a team with Bellinger and Wright, Armstrong in center, and Happ in left, and that was a better defensive area. But if you project this a little further and you say, what is the small universe like for Suzuki, it's probably a West Coast team like the Giants or San Diego, and it's probably incentive-laden to be able to waive your clause. If somebody's trading for you, you have 2 years left in your contract at $18 million a year, he's probably going to say, hey, I'll accept the trade, but the trading team's going to have to add a year onto my salary and up it from 18 to a more substantial amount that is more true to what the type of offensive player he's been.
Bruce, on the Cubs side of things, explain this to me, how the Cubs get better. Like, what moving Saya helps the Cubs how?
Well, two things, Ruthie, and it's a great question. The first part is Jed Hoyer is in the last year of his contract. The Cubs have not been to the playoffs since he took over. And there is a lot of pressure on him in the front office to make it from 83 wins to close to 90, okay? We heard Craig Counsell talk about that a lot at the end of last year, that our goal is to be 90-win team in the playoff every year. So getting back to your question about Suzuki and Bellinger, they're good players, but they might not be the type of players to get you to that next level of playoffs. You know, the Cubs had a lot of good players that had good years. They're lacking impact players from last year, and the offense was not up to snuff. 13th in Major League Baseball, a lot worse than that until June and July, the end of June and early July, when they started to turn on the motor a little bit and be a better offensive team. So from the perspective of being better, Bellinger's a good player. Suzuki's a good player. They both missed 30 games. You can't blame them for the injury. However, I think that the Cubs believe they need guys that, you know, drive in more runs, have more extra base potential. Suzuki had 49 extra base hits last year. You know, that's not awful for 130 games. It's not what you call, you know, the Judge Soto area. I think they need to upgrade their offense. The Cubs know that they need more power bat in the lineup. This would leave, let's say they trade Bellinger and Soto and Suzuki. That's $50 million. Can they go after another higher profile hitter? Can they trade for one? Is there a trade available with Toronto for Guerrero? These are all things that are going through their minds and part of their offseason plans, as to be more flexible and open, being able to be a better team.
You know, just when you thought that Soto had gotten more money than any player ever and any athlete in the history of the world, you turn around and there's plenty of money left for the Yankees, and they sign Max Fried to an 8-year, 100 or 218 million deal. I'm curious, Bruce, the price of poker is clearly going up, and I don't know that there's another Ohtani or Soto in the market in another year or two, but I'm wondering, does a guy like Garrett Crochet have more value now that a left-handed pitcher has made the kind of money that Max Fried has made? And does everything become more expensive given the raising prices in baseball?
Mike, you hit on something really essential. Crochet, for what most people consider a top-of-the-rotation 1-2 pitcher, is going to make $2.9 million compared to Fried, you know, making $29 million. The most he'll make next year and his year before free agency is probably about $7 or $8 million, even if he has a fantastic year. So from that perspective, Crochet is tremendously attractive on so many different levels. A power arm from the left side that nobody has right now, and a guy that's so inexpensive to put on your roster that it doesn't impact you going after other players, doesn't impact you for the next 2 years. So is it, that leads me to a question to you. Does this make him more viable after Corbin Burns signs? We've seen Fried go off the chart. Mm-hmm. Is it better for the White Sox to wait for Burns to be signed somewhere and then have what is arguably is the best pitcher available on the open market?
Yeah, I mean, they need the best deal they can get, right? That's the answer. So if they can get whatever it is, three or four prospects now, then go ahead and make the move. But if they feel like there'll be more money down the line, or more players rather, they need a whole new, they need a new lineup from what I'm looking at here. And I'd be all for it. Get as much as you can.
And you know, with Chris Getz and his front office being new, they cannot afford to miss on this, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. They're saying it, okay? We cannot make a mistake on this one. That goes all the way up to Jerry Reinsdorf when they look at this deal and they understand how essential this is to the White Sox gaining credibility and being a viable team going forward in 2025, more importantly, in 26 and 27. You have a pitching infrastructure that allows you to trade Crochet. Now you need a position player a group of players that can be counted on to give you a credible offense so that you're not embarrassed to the point like you were last year, and that you're more of a competitive team every year. It might not be totally this year, but you have to identify those proper players, and you have to do it right now.
I know they've talked about there's no urgency, right, with moving Crochet at this point, but doesn't it feel like the timing is part of getting this right?
Yeah, Ruthie, you're right about that. And it goes back to what Mike said. If you feel you can get those three or four players right now while the markets are hot, you know, is this the right time to do it? Or do you wait like they did last year to trade still in season? It was March. It was already spring training when he was traded to San Diego for three players. So that's the tough part. I don't know exactly how they're weighing it. But, again, when you hear the Yankees have three of their top 10 available for a trade, or the Mets have three of their top 12 available to the White Sox in a trade, you have to evaluate each system differently, knowing that each system is not equal. They may be the top in that organization. They're not necessarily the top players available. More importantly, the position players that the White Sox are looking for, which may for sure include a shortstop that they'd like for up the middle. They're not sure that Montgomery, their number one prospect coming up, is necessarily going to stay at shortstop. So they need to fortify the middle of the infield. That's a priority for them.
I got to be careful how I ask this question, Bruce, because I want to portray it correctly. I saw the new coaching staff. I saw the new manager has his new hires. And I recognized, I don't know, is there about seven guys that helped deliver those 61 wins from last year? Or did they deliver the 121 losses that are still on the staff? Did that surprise you at all?
No, a little bit. I mean, I think it's lacking a little bit of a veteran presence there. But, again, great coaches, great managers in all sports have to come from somewhere. You know, the great ones came from inexperience and somebody identifying their talent along the way. It's no different with Will Venable. I mean, how many people said when the White Sox hired Venable, they said, oh, yeah, didn't he used to be a Cub coach a few years ago? And they knew very little about him.
Right.
Now that he's starting to make his presence felt, people are hearing from him, hearing the intelligence, the way that he presents himself. Mm-hmm. You have a way to warming up to it. I think people in our industry, I'll put myself first, if somebody doesn't have a huge credibility and track record, we're very leery of the fact that they can be any good at the job. I mean, look at the Bears situation now and the guesswork that everybody's doing about who should be the next coach for the Chicago Bears. It's a lot of guesswork. It really is.
Well, it's funny you draw the Bears parallel because I was just thinking the same thing. And when you talk about sort of lack of maybe experience on the coaching staff, this is a team that's going to be young. They don't know how to win. It's like, is there a concern that the coaching staff is maybe too young and too inexperienced in the relationship between, you know, the players and the coaching staff?
Ruthie, you tell me. You deal with modern athletes. You've done it for a long time now. The relatability of your coaches to your players is essential in our times now.
Yeah.
It's not some old guy sitting in a corner, you know, in his underwear waiting for the game to start chewing tobacco anymore. It's a guy that can relate to the player, get him the information, get him everything ready, and most importantly, be able to communicate on the level of these young players who demand the idea of you must talk to me, you must explain to me. It's no longer, hey, kid, get the job done or you're going back to the minor league. So I think a young coaching staff is nothing that you should really fear at this point in time.
I just was surprised at how many of the support staff that were brought
retained,
back. That's all. I mean, I like Will Venable. We've had a chance to talk
to
him.
What did they have to coach last year?
Okay.
Right.
But I mean, it's almost like I understood Grady Sizemore was coming back, but it was like Grady Sizemore and his staff's coming back. It's just weird.
Right. No, I get it, but you have a new manager. You have a new policy. They continue to hire new people in that front office. They're young, vibrant people. And for the first time in history, and I've mentioned this to you before, Mike, first time in history, the White Sox are going outside the organization to hire the very best in the game.
Yes.
And I think people should look at that and say, you know, good for you. It's not the good old boys network in the White Sox organization now.
I also was fascinated that Colson Montgomery is not only going to be, you know, we knew he was the centerpiece player and their best young player, but the idea that he is their shortstop and their starting shortstop, Ozzie told us that he thinks he's a third baseman, and I understand he wants to play shortstop. Does he have to prove that he can't play shortstop before he'd be willing to move to third base? Because it seems like they could use him there too.
And again, I think he used the proper term that he would be willing. We live in the he would be willing world of athletics now in sports, right?
That's right.
Not hey, you're playing shortstop or third. It's I think I'm a shortstop. I'm going to stay there. So I think Montgomery's going to get every chance he can to fail at shortstop for the White Sox. And because he's a big kid and he's only 22 years old, you know, there's that feeling that he's going to outgrow the position. His body's going to outgrow it. But, you know, you look at big shortstops over the years, and, you know, you look at A-Rod, you look at Cal Ripken and the great careers that they had. He's a super athletic kid. So I think you give him the opportunity to fail there. You know the bat is going to play. It's a big left-handed power bat for Montgomery. And you know what? And it's also for the White Sox fan base. It's hope, hey, this is our top player in the organization. We've been hearing about him for 2 years now. Get him up here. Let's see something. Let's see something that could be really exciting. A left-handed home run hitter in the White Sox homegrown.
Bruce, I was covering the winter meetings last year when we were sort of, I was with NBC5 and we were sort of on Ohtani watch, and it was just molasses. You know, it was like watching paint dry. It sounds like it's really vibrant and exciting. There's a lot of news. Why do you think it's, why does this thing differ so much year to year?
Well, you were there with me, pushing me out of the way when Scott Boras was talking. And I really admired the way that you stood your ground, got in there. I mean, it was really fun to watch. But Ruthie, the idea here again is Boras, who controls the off season for baseball. Last year he waited, the market waited to sign his players. Bellinger didn't sign until March last year, or late February with the Chicago Cubs. So with that in mind, he's had 7 of the top 10 players that are free agents available. He wasn't going to sit back this time. He's going to talk again this afternoon before the meetings end here. But Boras controls the marketplace. He controls the best players in the game. And that is why you're seeing a quicker off season. The better idea for teams that they're going to have to make trades rather than wait for free agents. And you're going to see teams before the first of the year try to get their entire roster, their 25-man roster together by making trades and signing the remaining free agents right now.
Don't be afraid to throw some elbows in there, Bruce.
There you go.
You certainly weren't afraid.
Listen, I don't mess around in a media scrum. If I'm there, I'm getting the sound. I'm not messing around.
That's the way to play it.
I love it. I love it.
Bruce, so help me out. So now that that Bellinger's on the market and they can trade Suzuki too, I don't know what you'd get if you had to trade him someplace where they had to pay him more, but I understand they want to make some moves. Is Pete Alonso still on the table? When you think of what the Cubs are going to do, is it about taking away from what they had and getting cheaper and then opening spots for all the young players? Or is it about getting, you know, another bat in here, maybe more of a power bat in here? What do you think is going to happen? And are the Mets done now that they've spent that money? Does that mean that Pete Alonso might be more available, or do you think they will need more protection for Soto?
Well, what made Judge and Soto so spectacular this year? They're super talents that protected each other in that lineup.
Right.
They were a headache from the beginning for every team. I think Alonso's more important to the Mets now than he ever was.
Wow.
Just because of this, the factor of protecting Soto. It's not going to be Soto alone that can get this thing done. So you'll learn a little bit from, you know, having two impact players, if you can afford them, in your lineup like that. Dodgers have 6 or 7 impact players like that. They can afford everything. They have a $380 million TV deal every year that they get, and they can afford to spend anything you want. But back to the Cubs, you identified it properly, Mike. Power arms and power bats. That's what they need. You're going to see them go after bullpen power arms, okay? People who have gotten it done before, a guy like Yates who's out there as a free agent. Possibility of Williams from Milwaukee being traded in the last year of a contract. So power arms. If you clear, let's say you do trade Suzuki and Bellinger, and you have $50 million back in your coffers. Why won't you be there for Corbin Burns? Okay, why won't you get a power arm, which they don't have? They have very good starting pitching. Nobody averages more than 92.5 miles per hour. How about a power arm so that the opposition, when you have a 3-game series, isn't seeing the same fastball coming out of the arm of starting pitchers? Why not have a dominant pitcher like Burns? These are the things that they're floating out there. They want to be stealth about the money they spend and the trades they make. And again, it's a hugely important year for Hoyer and its front office.
Great stuff, Bruce. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Bruce.
Great catching up.
Enjoyed it.
All right,
keep those elbows sharp.
He's the best. That's Bruce Levine. Keep listening for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Bulls take on the Hornets this Friday at the United Center. You can also head to bulls.com/tickets for great deals on seats for this game. This is one of the added games, so get yourself to that one. We'll be right back. It's Mully and Haw with Ruthie Polinsky here on The Score.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's no secret that Say is a great player. And so, by definition, the bar to trade any great player is really, really high. So, yeah, we don't want to trade Say. But look, like as Joel talked about, like there's people that are interested in great players. And so, you know, when teams come asking, like those are at least conversations that we're willing to have. But, yeah, I really don't think much is going to come of it because he's just such a great player and just such a great fit for us.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in this morning for David. And that is the voice of Carter Hawkins, the general manager of the Cubs. If I got that right, they can trade, say, a Suzuki, but he's like a perfect fit and they don't want to. But he's now available for trade, and so is Belly. Okay, now I got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We love them. We don't want them to leave, but...
But if we could get like, $50 million less, we could really afford to go out and improve this team.
It's like Tevin Jenkins. I love Flus, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very interesting. I don't know how I feel about Seiya Suzuki. I feel that I liked him more before before this last year. I felt like he was more of a liability on defense than he was like a good defender. And I feel like, you know, seeing a countryman come in and sort of warm up to everyone, it made me feel like I loved seeing the should have been rookie of the year. Don't tell Dustin. As opposed to a guy that was more standoffish and, you know, and I think I just figured that's cultural. He's coming from Japan. You have a guy
really
come in who's like, you know, Shota Imanaga was so warm and so much fun that somehow I thought like, wow, now that's the kind of guy I want to add to a team as opposed to say a Suzuki. And I don't know why that seems like cruel to me. But that's just the way I feel.
Yeah. And you did sort of enjoy watching that relationship grow and see them have each other and maybe warmed up Saya a bit and made him just feel a bit more at home. So I think the thought of Saya Suzuki being on the move is, you know, it's challenging.
It is. You know, aren't they opening in Tokyo next year? Don't they? In the first series, they're playing the Dodgers in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So
and
are we going?
Craig Council talked in his press conference. I would love to go.
Yeah, we should make that trip.
Okay.
I've never been to Japan.
I don't even work here.
Yeah.
But I'll go.
I'm just saying.
Well, I would love to go to Japan.
You should go. And we should go. We should have a ton of people there.
Well, what I was going to say is Craig Council was talking about how excited he is for Shota and Saya to have that opportunity. And I'm like, but are they? Is Saya going to be here?
But you're going to trade him. And you know what? The guy, if he has to be a DH, you should trade him. If you are built in a way that he has to be the DH, then I understand it. But I think I would be a big hit in Japan. I think I would.
You a sushi guy?
Oh, I love sushi.
Me too.
Sushi is the single greatest beer food since pizza.
Whoa. Hold on a second.
That's what I say.
You love sushi with a beer.
I love sushi with a beer.
Wow.
I got into sushi later in life, and I couldn't believe how much I enjoyed it, but it is phenomenal.
Do you have a spot? Do you have a go-to spot?
We have a sushi joint we go to.
I'm writing it down.
And I will tell you. I don't want to ruin it for everyone.
Yeah, then it'll blow up, and we won't be able to get in there.
Then all of a sudden, I can't get my sushi and beer. But the other thing is... You can order a beer and they bring you like a giant beer. Like, wait, where did you guys get that one? That's like a triple, quadruple beer. You ever have one of those? Those giant? Wow.
I mean,
good stuff.
I have not, but.
Yeah, it's good. Good with sushi.
I like a little beer. I'm not a beer drinker.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't drink pretty much as a general rule.
Okay.
And it's really compliments of the morning show. I have found over the course of my lifetime that a single cocktail will leave you with a hangover.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's not worth it. I'm talking about, like, I don't even have a drink during the week. So I can sometimes have a drink on a Friday night if I'm so inspired. But because of the Bears on Sundays, I can't even have a drink on Saturday. But I can go get sushi. And I feel it's cheapened the trip. And I'm talking about how much money it costs when you don't have a beer with it.
Right.
But it's good.
Okay,
Brandon, are you a sushi guy?
I love sushi. It's one of my favorites, and my son's favorite too. So my son actually put me on sushi more.
You're kidding.
Yeah, he loves sushi, so made me a fan.
Wow.
That's great. That's good. You got to have, how old is your son?
Love sushi.
10 years old.
He's 10, and he's turned him on to sushi.
It's a fun food
to different
eat
world
with
than the
other
one I
people.
Grew up in.
Yeah, like it's a very fun social experience to have sushi with someone else or a group of people, and you share it, get different kinds of things. Can I tell you my one gripe against sushi is I'm always hungry when I leave.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm always like, okay, what's next? You know, it's kind of like a appetizer to the meal.
That's interesting.
And I could eat a lot of sushi. Like, I could eat a gross amount of sushi.
I got to tell you, so the first time I ever went to a Japanese steakhouse, and I'm assuming they have those in Tokyo as well.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I did, I was in Disney World, and we somehow wound up at this place. I didn't know anything about it. I was a younger man. I was there, and I was like a table for two, whatever, and they moved us to this table where there's all sorts of people, and I kind of turned around, and I'm like, oh, no, just for two. Like, I didn't know that you're just supposed to sit down around the table and have your order. You know what I mean? I thought, I was like, no, we're together alone. We don't want these people at our table.
No.
Isn't that funny?
Hilarious.
But it is, like, I didn't know that it's kind of like a community
thing. The hibachi thing.
The hibachi grill, and you're watching the guy doing all the stuff.
Shooting, did he spray sake in your mouth?
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, the shrimp in the pocket. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Did you get the heartbeat with the fried rice?
I got the heartbeat. I got the train with the onions.
Choo-choo.
I
mean,
I'm just telling you, there was a show. It's show cooking. And it's some of my favorite meals ever, because I love the idea of going to a cooking show. If I see a cooking show on TV, I will sit there and stare at it. It's like I'm stopped. I can't keep clicking because I just think it's so relaxing watching someone who knows what they're doing just chopping and cooking. Mm-hmm. And it's like you go to a cooking show and then you get to eat the food.
Wow.
It's part of it is the stage show.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's the experience.
So, but I had never done that before. That was the first time and I didn't know that I had to share it with others. I didn't realize.
Anyways, the Cubs.
Anyway, back to the Cubs. Going to baseball. Japan. Let's get to Ron. Our buddy Ron's on the south side. Hey, Ron.
Good morning, Rupee, and good morning, Mully.
Morning.
Rupee, you sound great. I'm going to follow up with some stuff from Bruce. Mully, me and you talked about, because I disagreed with Ozzy when he said he wanted to move close to Montgomery. Yeah. And his comp is more Corey Seager. But either way, going to trade with a team and their best prospects as a shortstop, you take them. And you just have to work it out. You're going to look for a shortstop, a second baseman, center field. I still believe the game is played up the middle. And lastly, I didn't hear him mention Luis Robert at all. I just think it's really not much of a market out there for him that he's going to have to come into the season in spring training in shape and look good and play good. And hopefully, they'll be able to move him even maybe before the All-Star break or that. But it's nothing. And that's why it's so incumbent upon Chris Getz to get this right, because this is really one of the biggest chips right now in the market, and it's his biggest chip, so he has to get this right. You all have a great day.
Great stuff, Ron. Thanks,
Ron. Great call.
Ron's a great Sox fan. I love the idea of keeping Robert until he's worth something to trade, because I know there are teams sniffing around. I read a story about who was it? The Reds, maybe, looking for him. I just feel like he's one of these guys that is too good a player to give away for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because of the injuries and all the different issues that have gone on, he's not as respected as he should be in terms of the many things he can do on the baseball field. The guys, he can basically be your outfield. He can cover. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
How smooth and how fast and how he can read plays. I just hate the idea of giving him away for nothing.
The risk there is that you give him away for nothing.
Yeah.
It gets worse, right?
Or he gets hurt again.
And
then his value is there's nothing there anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, I understand the problem.
Yeah.
All right, we got Chris Chelios will join us next. We'll get a chance to talk to Chris. I gotta ask him about a story I read. And it was weird that I read it and weirder that he was in it. And we'll ask him about it next. It is Mully and Haw. We got Ruthie Polinsky this morning on The Score.
Chris Chelios.
Up the boards to Chelios with room. He shoots. Score!
BetMGM ambassador. The sportsbook born in Vegas.
Nice play by Chris Chelios.
Hockey Hall of Famer.
Chris Chelios is not human. I'm convinced of it. Not only will he go in the Hall of Fame, I think he should go in the Smithsonian.
Blackhawks legend.
Chelios will add defense, but he'll also add offense to the Hawks.
Steve Smith ahead to Murphy. Nichols at the line. Chelios moving in.
Three-time Stanley Cup champion.
What a competitor Chris Chelios has been over the years, and he's been a winner every place he's ever been.
Chris Chelios with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And joining us now is BetMGM ambassador Chris Chelios. BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. And Chris joins us on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tires. Aturo.com. Chris, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Charlie.
I'm doing great. Good morning. How are you guys?
Ruthie Polinsky in for David this morning, Chris. And I was telling Ruthie, I was at I was at the dentist or something, and they had all these magazines, and I'm just killing time, and I'm paging through this magazine, and there is a story about Cindy Crawford in it. Now, what are the odds that I'd be sitting there reading a story about Cindy Crawford, and I'm like, oh, she says every time she comes to Chicago, she likes to go out with her high school friends, and they all went out to RPM Steakhouse, and Chris Chelios pulled up in his boat and took us all out to Lake Michigan. And I'm like, what? Like, I made a noise in the waiting room, and I'm thinking, Chelly is literally everywhere, and I know you know them, but it said my friends from Chicago loved having a Hall of Famer take us out on Lake Michigan. I'm not sure about my L.A. friends from Cindy Crawford.
Yeah, I'd love to say she's my girl, but she's everybody's girl. Like, she's one of the best ever. No question, the best ever from Chicago. Or DeKalb, I should say. But I was lucky enough to meet her husband, Randy Gerber, probably 25, 30 years ago. And, that weekend in Chicago we had for the, you know, the retirement when she sunk that shot from center ice.
Yeah.
That says it all. That was crazy. Yeah.
So
Randy Gerber's Canadian, isn't he?
No. Oh, he's not. A Long Island guy. No,
I was outside Toronto at Muskoka. I don't know where the hell I was. And they owned a
Muskoka's,
house there.
Muskoka.
They have a house in Muskoka. Yeah. And that's like a big kind of, it's like a super nice, I was at a Marriott up there, but it was like a super nice place, area where a lot of Canadians have cottage, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah. A lot of hockey players bought places there back in the early 80s, late 90s, but it's a real special place. This is really unique. The boathouses are, they're like $1 billion boathouses. It's a really crazy setup, lots of islands, somewhat comparable to Northern Michigan, but just a step further with the boathouses. It's a beautiful area.
They called the chairs the Muskoka chair. They were like, we'd call it like
Muskoka,
a Nantucket.
I
was there, Chris, and I can't pronounce it. But they called the chairs, they were like Nantucket chairs, is what we would call it. But they call it Muskoka chairs. And I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Same chair.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a great spot. I've been going there. When I played for Montreal, I used to drive back from Montreal to Chicago. And that was kind of the pit stop and spend a couple of days there. But again, it's a pretty special. Nothing like Chicago, I'll tell you that. But it's nice.
Oh, that's great stuff. Hey, awesome. we want to remind everyone to celebrate the epic rivalry between the Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues at the House of Blues on December 30th. Hockey legend Wayne Gretzky, Chris Chelios, Darren Pang, along with actor John Hamm, will be on stage to share all those unbelievable stories. The talented Tim Gleason and Alexandra Lee will be performing all night. Plus, the Stanley Cup is going to be there. The Stanley Cup loves a good party. And there will be an opportunity for some legendary photos. It's going to be an awesome night of hockey talk, music, and rivalry vibes. The event is produced by Spark Creations and Bookings and is in support of the NHL Alumni Association, Blackhawks Alumni Foundation, St. Louis Blues Alumni Foundation, NHL Foundation, and Medea Charitable Foundation. Universe.com. Head there for tickets.
Chris,
heck of a night. We're going to turn it into, I don't know if you guys have you ever been there, but the Sunday night at Stanley's, the live karaoke, probably end up turning into that.
Fine.
There'll be a lot of other people in town. Brett Hall loves karaoke, Reed Simpson. But it's going to be great for the fans. And like you guys mentioned, it's going to benefit Blackhawk and St. Louis Blues alumni. And it should be a heck of a night and the Cup. You know, something about the Cup, you get your picture. It's going to be a good night.
Cool.
What is your party favorite, Chris? Do you have a song you sing?
Yeah, it's either Pearl Jam's my go-to or that song by the Ohio Players Fire.
Oh, that's awesome.
Can you give us a preview?
It blows everybody away. it blows everybody away when it breaks that one out. But it'll be
just
you
the best
go
time.
See it.
That's awesome.
Go hang out with all you people. Chris, I want to ask you, we could talk a little hockey, I guess, but obviously leadership change for the Blackhawks. Tell us what you know about Anders Sorensen and if you've gotten to know him at all. I'm just sort of curious about, it kind of felt like that was the natural fit and why that was the move that they made.
Yeah, I mean, obviously with the way things were going, they had to make a change. Not a knock against Luke Richardson. He wasn't, you know, didn't have a lot to work with. But Sorensen had these kids in Rockford. He's got some, you know, relationships with some of those young kids. He's very good at working with the young kids. Has great relationships with them. Guys are going to get opportunities. I watched them the other night against the Rangers. They looked actually really good, even though the Rangers are struggling. But they needed a change for sure, the way things were going. And hopefully, you know, he can, you know, find their chemistry to, you know, get Bedard back on track and develop some of these young kids. We've talked about all these draft picks that are coming up, and it's really important, you know, to bring them along and get them in and not throw them into the fire, but, you know, get them some confidence. So, you know, we get back on track here. It's been a tough, you know, couple of years here with the Hawks. And hopefully, you know, what we saw last night against the Rangers is something, things to come.
Yeah, they at least got the new coach bump. So they went 1-1 with them. Are you still watching the Bears, Chris? I know you're a lifelong fan. What do you think about Monday night in Minnesota?
I will always watch the Bears. I don't win or lose. That's my team. I don't like their chances. Minnesota's, you know, what a division, though. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, Minnesota, Green Bay, and Detroit, what's going on with that? Those teams. They've been competitive, you know, the last three, and not San Francisco. That was a terrible game, but, you know, it's tough. But I'm not betting against them, but I'm not going to bet on them.
Great stuff, Chris. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, you guys. Have a good night.
That is Chris Chelios. Always a joy. We're going to have Stacey Dales join us next. It's Mully and Haw. It's Ruthie Polinsky here on The Score.